Welcome back to Brief and Not So Brief. I'm Seth.
I'm Ethan.
And this time we're going to be just kind of rambling about some sequels. So here's a little off-the-cuff movie talk with my son while he's home. Not an official episode, but we'll see. Maybe I'll post it.
You put it into a thread of one of our brief and not-so-brief episodes, just
maybe.
Randomly.
Yeah, maybe. Put it into the feed. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Really, we're just testing a microphone, so we'll see if it works. But we were going to talk about movie sequels, like good movie sequels, and like... We have some disagreements about which movie is better in a couple of franchises.
Well, we were discussing which ones we thought the sequels were better and which we thought the original was better. And so we talked about like Blade Runner, Alien,
Terminator.
Those are the main three. And we agree on one, disagree on two, which yeah. I didn't know you liked Terminator better than T2 just because it's such a common held opinion that T2 is better than T1.
Yeah.
And I thought you were with me on that one. Now, I don't know.
So I do want to confirm here that like, I really do like Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm.
And as a sequel, I like it as well. It's just, it has more problems with it that I, as I've watched it over the years more and more, I have a harder time explaining away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I just feel like there's a couple of rewrites, a couple of things that if they had been done differently... Obviously, I wouldn't have the gripes.
Yeah.
Like, the main one is it's all about the T-1000 because the first movie establishes nothing dead will go.
And so, by with nothing dead will go, you mean nothing dead will go through the time machine.
Nothing will go through the time machine. And in the first movie, you know, Dr. Silberman asks about it. And he says, well, what about this machine if it's made of metal? And he's like, but it's surrounded by living tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned to you yesterday, the novelization of T2 hangs a lantern on this essentially and says, yeah, it came through wrapped in like a suitcase made of flesh.
Right.
The movie doesn't do that. And so you can say that it did, but it doesn't. And of course...
Well, because they show and it doesn't.
That's right. He just comes through as naked Robert Patrick.
Which is your other issue, though.
Which is my other issue. I don't think we should have seen his face until after he killed the cop, and the cop should have been replayed by Robert Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have rather have that first scene be like a POV Predator shot, you know, not Predator, the movie, but like from the POV of a Predator, not capital P.
Yeah.
With him killing that cop falling to the ground, and then you just see him in the rest of the movie, and you don't realize he's been taken over.
Right. Well, that also, these fixes you're mentioning happen within the first act of the film. And so they're pretty easy fixes because I also did like what you mentioned, we were talking about last night, the idea of him, you know, in the first Terminator, there's a little bit of suspense because obviously Arnold's a big imposing figure, but you don't exactly know what his objective is, right?
Yeah.
Until you see it through his eyes, you see like the robot lust stuff.
Or of course, if you saw anything but the initial teaser trailer for T2, because it completely gave that away.
Yeah. But I liked your idea of maybe there being a little bit more suspense for who you think is the good guy, who's the bad guy. Because obviously they put him in a cop outfit, which, you know, now it would be viewed differently.
Right. Yeah.
Which like back then, that's a very like, oh, that's good
a trusted figure.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think he plays it as a trusted figure, but I think the music doesn't agree with it.
Right, because it's just that boom.
Yes, yeah, so, which I love the music, but I think they could have potentially bounced it out where tonally it appeared as if he was more good than bad.
Yeah.
The twist is still really iconic, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm still pretty partial to T2, which I'm surprised I'm not partial to T1 considering that the next movie we're going to talk about is Alien and Aliens. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the more common opinion is Aliens.
Yeah.
But I am like fully on the Alien train.
Yeah. Let's finish off the Terminator discussion here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, there's a lot wrong with T1. The other problem I have with T2, and by the way, the gripe about the T-1000 coming through without any flesh wrapped around him applies equally to Terminator 3 with the TX, to whatever, was it T-3000 in Genesis?
Well, yeah, but I think he has nanotech, right?
The TX, yeah. And I guess
The TX is from T3, right?
That's right. So I guess nanotech could, I still can't really justify it.
Yeah.
And then in Dark Fate.
Dark too. Fate is the 3000, or what is it?
No, 3000 was from Genesis. It's the John Connor Terminator.
Oh, right.
Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
The movie's not good. I will say, though, I like all the movies. You know, I'm just like mm-hmm. when we came out of Terminator Genesis, I can't remember if you came. I know that Scott Kraske came with us.
And he's like, it was you, me, Scott, and Colin.
That's right. And yeah. He's like, that was a Terminator movie.
Yeah, it was fun.
Like, yep, okay. Other than the one that I think I should like more, if it had been done better, is whatever the future one is.
Dark Fate. Oh, no. You're talking about the...
Terminator Salvation?
Yeah, Salvation with... why am I... Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Which I remember I first watched that. I was like, we just explained that he has human organs because he has to give a heart transplant.
Yeah.
But when his whole body's opened up and they show him he's a Terminator, there's no organs to be found. I was like, huh?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I've got a lot of problems with that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like all the movies. My other big problem with Terminator 2 is that it just sets up all the mayhem and ridiculous crap that is pulled in the future movies because they change the future. And maybe it's just that I like a downer ending when it's appropriate. I think I would have preferred a more somber ending to Terminator 2. And it does kind of give that, right? There's the voiceover at the end where Sarah Connor's like, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, essentially, but we think we might have plowed a good path here. Right. There was another cut of the movie that like did a flash forward to like 20 years later where Judgment Day had been averted. I prefer the Terminator 3 way where it's Judgment Day is inevitable because mm-hmm. of course we're going to one way or another, we're going to do this. And of course the TX comes back and helps that happen.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the idea of Judgment Day being inevitable brings us to the next part of the conversation where we both think the best Terminator stuff is Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, like the most underrated 100%. Television
yeah.
piece of television period.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically season two, I think.
Season two is excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, first season was strike short.
Yeah.
And so
it's a great contextualization for the universe, but then also it shows like how many small, like nuanced behaviors could have led to Scott mm-hmm. not being created.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole subplot of this like really smart guy with computers mm-hmm. and like they do chess. Right. And it's like that could have led to Skynet or like the, you know, the Cameron Terminator character who. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, there's the thing with the Andy Good character. That's the guy who creates mm-hmm. the Turk.
The Turk, yeah.
Who plays chess. And you find out later that he believes he was responsible for the creation of Skynet. And he asks Derek to go back in time and kill him.
Right.
And stop it from happening,
yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. And
it's super interesting.
And Derek Reese, one of the best TV characters of all time,
yeah.
Played by Brian Austin Green, who is mm-hmm. not a super well regarded actor, but he did a great job.
Well, so. I think the thing that we loved the most was the idea where he's talking to his girlfriend, you know, kind of. Sometimes partner, like, you know, they were hooking up every now and
then. They came back in time at different times.
Yes, yeah. Different times and then potentially different futures
right.
because of events that they caused and
stuff.
Yeah,
there's that whole episode with the guy from the West Wing where she believes that, like, he's a collaborator from the future who was sent back in time as a reward.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek doesn't remember him because he might have come from a different branch of the future. And he says to her at some point, what was Judgment Day for you? Because everybody would know that date. And they never say it.
Yeah, they don't say it. Does it imply that he kills her?
Yeah.
As well? Yeah.
Well, and she says, I'm your Jesse. And she says, you're not my Jesse.
Yeah.
But Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, excellent stuff. Getting a little far afield from what we were talking about. So let's move on to talking about Alien and mm-hmm. Aliens. Because had you seen Aliens before?
No.
Before we saw Alien?
No, I think what happened was I got the like most premium experience you could ever see Alien in, which was in an Omnimax theater here in Portland, Oregon, which was huge screen, huge sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horror movie. It's like the best way you could view any film, but specifically a horror type film. I was in heaven. And that's actually like I was probably 13, 14 at that point. I cite that as like the thing that changed my life in terms of
mm-hmm.
like starting to enjoy movies. And I think we then were like, oh, of course I'll watch Aliens because I just loved this movie, right? And watching Aliens on a, 50-inch TV downstairs is a little different.
42-inch TV.
For okay, record. Okay. and so, you know, doing – I would like to rewatch it because actually to this day I still haven't rewatched a second time.
Yeah.
And I still think I would enjoy it. But it's just I think my natural tendency to enjoy – more cerebral, more horror.
Yeah. Slower.
Slower, much slower, mm-hmm. much darker.
Well, and so I'll say this about, like, the differences between T2 and Terminator. Terminator doesn't hold up super well because there's some janky special effects. The soundtrack is terrible because it was mm-hmm. on a budget. I think it was – I can't remember if James Cameron himself did it. And so
no, you know, he did.
He did it on a shoestring, and it shows in a few places, whereas Terminator 2 looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Basically the whole way through. There's a mix of practical and CG effects. Yeah. So then when you look at that with Alien holds up really, really well. There's a couple scenes where you're like, okay, the alien is a dude in a suit. But for the most part, it looks fabulously creepy and menacing, and it's great. Where in Aliens, you have some special effects with the landing craft that do not look good at all.
No. And to kind of – you mentioned that the budget, I just checked, Terminator had a $6 million budget, Terminator 2 had $100.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference.
Yeah. So definitely there's something to the idea that if we had seen Aliens at the Science Fiction Film Festival at OMSI, mm-hmm. you might have gotten more out of it. Just because, like, when I was thinking of you watching Alien, I remember watching it because I had watched Aliens recorded off TV 100 times. I'd watched it, like, rented from the video store a bunch of times. And then I saw Alien – and I was like, well, what the hell is this? This is mm-hmm. this is slow. It's boring. Nothing's happening. This is dumb. And it was only later that I came around and I'm like, okay, that's a really, really well done horror film, mm-hmm. essentially slasher film. And to this day, I still prefer Aliens just because I kind of imprinted on that one, not in a creepy way like in the Twilight films. Actually, I haven't seen them. I just know about that. but yeah, I like the notion of it being a sequel that – didn't try to be Alien 2, right? Because it definitely didn't try to do that. It's stylistically very different. And so I really like that it kind of took it in made an action movie out of it. Less of a science fiction film, more of a mm-hmm. sci-fi action film.
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference between sci-fi and science fiction. Well,
I agree. Yeah.
The thing with Aliens for me is I think it does the really smart thing, which, like you said, was take it in a unique direction while relying on aspects of the original. Because mm-hmm. Obviously it's, the xenomorphs, the marines, like all that stuff is really fun. It's got some great moments of humor and levity.
Yeah.
It has the actor from Terminator. I can't remember his name now.
Which one? Oh, Kyle Reese.
Yeah,
Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it has Bill Paxton in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's got a great cast. I still enjoy it. And, if I watched it, now I probably still really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I don't think Alien will ever be out of my top three movies of all time, let alone it's tough. We're going to talk about another movie soon that's mm-hmm. like maybe contends for my favorite science fiction film, but I'm not sure. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't – like with Alien and Aliens, I don't have the same – like, there's nothing about either of the movies where I'm like,
right,
that doesn't quite work for me, except for one thing in Aliens. Mm-hmm. At some point, they're talking about, Ripley asks, how long after we're reported missing can we expect reinforcements? Reese says 17 days.
Mm-hmm.
Where are those reinforcements coming from? Are they coming from the Sulaco, the big, knife-looking ship that's orbiting, or I guess more, looks more like a shotgun, actually, mm-hmm. that's orbiting the planet? It has to be from there. But we never see anybody else on that ship.
Right.
It looks like it's unmanned, essentially. But then, why would it be so big? I don't know. If it's not coming from there, why did they go into hypersleep to go to LV-426?
Yeah, because otherwise it's a couple hypersleeps away, which hypersleep is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hypersleep might be just because maybe they have wormhole technology or something. It never mentions that they do, mm-hmm. because that's the whole point, is that Ripley had gone into hypersleep at the end of Alien.
Right.
And drifted right through the core systems, and it was 57 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that they have, slower than light travel. And so if you're going to be going out for months or years at a time, you don't necessarily want to age that whole time. And so you're sleeping through it. So I don't know where the help is coming from. I should read the novelization and figure out if it has any of that detail. Mm-hmm. It may have been left out, maybe in the screenplay, but never made it into the movie.
Right. And maybe they just felt like it was unnecessary to add it. And just the fact that they had to say that there's potentially something coming, but they're alone.
Yeah, but it's too late.
Yeah.
The thing that here's the thing I really like about Alien. I mean, Aliens, sorry. About both, really. Both of them, the stakes are very appropriate. right? Mm-hmm. It's one alien against this crew of miners.
Yeah.
More or truckers.
Yeah.
They are not equipped to deal with even one of these creatures. So then in the second movie, if you're going to bring in Colonial Marines, you have to have a big boss. You know, you have to have an enemy
that's
worthy of that, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, it makes perfect sense for there to be that many creatures, an army of aliens against an army of humans.
Yeah.
And so
the ratio is correct.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, yeah, where's the stakes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I also like the nature of being trapped in space, which all science fiction has an aspect to, mm-hmm. but the idea of, you know, claustrophobia, being trapped in a confined space with mm-hmm. I can't remember the animatronics.
Oh, the android.
The android, yes. Animatronic. I did. I meant android.
Bishop.
Right.
And Ash.
Ash. Oh, it's Ash. What I meant.
Yeah.
The thing that I love the most, and the thing that when I first saw it was when Ash is talking about, like, the beauty of the xenomorph, right, how perfect it is, right? And
well, you didn't know he was an android until that moment, right?
No idea.
Because I didn't spill that.
I think if I was watching it now, I may have been able to pick up on it, but I was pretty young, so I still was, like, not young, but I was young enough to where I wasn't thinking about that type of stuff. I wasn't, like, thinking about it critically.
Yeah.
But when Ash kind of talks about it, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm in, right? Like, that's when I was locked in, because just the stakes were proper, but then also it was saying, like, everything has to go perfectly for Ripley and the others to get out of this situation.
Yeah.
And I also really love it when characters are smart. Mm-hmm. And even though there has to be some dumb stuff, because, you know, there's not supposed to be the smartest characters on Earth. Like you said, they're minors. And by minors, I mean not less than 18. Like, that sounds weird.
Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Minors, not minors.
Yeah. And so I just enjoyed, like, especially the last act of that film, even though the first two build it up as a nice slow burn, which I do love, mm-hmm. the last act, I was like, man, it builds it all up. It executes very well.
Yeah.
All the things it introduces, it finishes off well. I just love the movie.
Do you want to talk about the one we agree about?
Yeah, I think we should. But I think so we're discussing the Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
And I like Blade Runner more than you, but we both like Blade Runner 2049 a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm so jealous that you got to see it in theaters, because I hadn't seen Blade Runner and I didn't even know Blade Runner was a thing.
Yeah.
And it came out 2018?
I don't know.
I think it may have been 20. Maybe it was earlier, actually. Maybe 2017. I'm not sure. So I hadn't seen any, so I didn't go to see it in the theater. Man, if I could see that RPX now, I would pay actually like $45 to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I would pay so much money to see that RPX.
We should watch for some time if they do like a Fathom event or something with Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, I would lose my mind, because I mean, quickly, Blade Runner is, it's very influential, and people just say that because they hear people say it. But when you see it, you do kind of understand, like, okay, I understand why this had such an impact on science fiction, as well as just any stuff set in LA, like any futuristic LA stuff.
Yeah. 2017, by the way.
Oh, it's 2017? Okay, cool. Yeah. I do really love the original. I actually did love the score.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, I don't even know how to describe the vibe of it. It's just something that.
It's a mood, big time.
It is definitely a moody type of score. And the acting isn't, I don't know. It's not the kind of, it's not Blade Runner 2049 levels, where there's multiple performances where I'm like, oh my word, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
But let's get to the good stuff and we can gush about how much we love the sequel.
Talk about Blade Runner, just because people on this podcast have probably never heard me talk about it, although we did cover it on Take Me to Your Reader, so if they've heard my opinions there. I saw Blade Runner when I was in high school and did not really care for it. It was really boring. I didn't want anything to do.
Which cut did you see?
The theatrical cut.
I
didn't see it in the movie theater, but we got it from the video store, and this was, I think it was pre-director's cut.
There's like seven cuts,
many cuts. And so we had the voiceover and everything, and it just was not working for me. And so it was only when I rewatched Blade Runner for the podcast that I rewatched it twice.
They on Netflix, it's the final cut, which is like the one to watch.
Mm-hmm. And so rewatching it a couple of times, I was finally able to kind of snap into the mood of it and be like, okay, I see what's going on here. There's still some clunky stuff in it where I feel like, okay, that's more boring than it needed to be.
Right.
But but I did enjoy the film. But Blade Runner 2049, I just really liked it immediately.
Yeah. I mean, so people talk about Blade Runner, they're like, oh, it's boring. And then I was like, oh, it's got to be 3 hours. Mm-hmm. It's only 1 hour 50. It's not that long.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this is interesting. And I understand that the slow gripe, but for me, a movie being boring is a really tough excuse. I've seen enough long movies that like that doesn't really faze me.
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049 feels faster. And it is almost an hour longer. Yeah. I think actually it is an hour. It's like 2:50. Mm-hmm. And I was never bored. Yeah. I remember the first time I watched it, I actually called you. I was like, I want to watch it, but I haven't seen Blade Runner yet. So like, what do I do? He's like, you can just watch a quick recap of the final cut and just, you know, do some reading just to have some context. And so I did that because it was New Year's Eve, I think, the night of 2020. So going to 2021. Mm-hmm. I sat on my couch. Done in college, I was like, I want to watch this. So I had some sort of like some popcorn or something. I had some candy and I sat there and I felt transported. Mm-hmm. I was in a completely different world. It was so effective at taking me out of my seat and putting me in and immersing me in this really cruel, but beautiful LA, like, you know, period of time.
Yeah.
And so I've seen it 3 times total. Mm-hmm. And I like to rewatch movies a lot, but there's a couple where I go, I'm going to wait until I'm in a really specific mood to do this.
Yeah.
So actually a month or two ago, I watched Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 back to back. Nice. It's the best 4.5 hours of my life. It was just the craziest experience.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll let you talk about it a little bit, but there's so much I could gush about, whether it's the acting, the score,
I would say. Like, what is it about Blade Runner 2049 that makes it a better experience for you?
Right. I think, I mentioned that the transportive nature, which I think both of them are very transportive and do a really good job about putting you in the characters' shoes and in the universe. But I think that the combination of the really I don't even know how to describe it, but the score is so appropriate because it's very much the original.
It evokes the original.
It evokes the original, but puts a modern twist on it. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it would obviously come from the original. And so that in conjunction with Roger Deakins doing his thing, being the prettiest movie ever. Mm-hmm. I think Denis does a great job directing set pieces in conjunction with Roger and making that, there's a lot of CGI that has to be had. And he did a lot of practical stuff, but there's a lot of CGI that feels really seamless. And there's a lot of movies that have come out in 2017 that you could go back and they don't hold up.
No.
So for his to be, and obviously it's a little bit easier when you're in darker lighting to have stuff work. But I think also that the final thing I'll say is its ability to bring up and evoke stuff from the original plot wise.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, how does this contextualize what we're watching right now and have that be a constant plot thread and have a human arc for a non-human character?
Yeah.
Which the plot in the original is kind of all over the place and has a weird climax.
This is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. And you can go ahead and take that there. But I think just the delivery of the plot and humanity, because that's essentially what Blade Runner is. Yeah. Like, what makes us human? 100%. And I think Blade Runner 2049 does a better job about defining humanity, what makes someone a person, like what do we die for? And there's a line, I have a video saved on my phone. It's like an edit of Blade Runner 2049 and it's dying for the right cause is the most human thing we can do. Like that, I think that's a wonderful line.
Yeah.
And so like all of that I think is what exceeds the obvious spectacle of the original.
Well, talking even about on a spectacle level, right? Blade Runner 2049 is just so much more colorful than Blade Runner. Blade Runner is this kind of dingy, dark, rainy thing, where Blade Runner 2049 is this more kind of desert thing. And then it uses the darker scenes really effectively. It does have Jared Leto in it, but I'm going to give it a pass.
Well, because that's probably not his best role, because he actually does have good roles, but that's probably one of his last good roles, in my opinion. Yeah.
The other thing is my biggest problem with Blade Runner is like, I don't care all that much about the Harrison Ford character. I can't even remember his name.
Deckard?
It's Deckard, yeah. Yeah. You know, there's the scene that's really rapey in there.
With him and...
yeah, Sean Young.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name.
I can't remember her name either now.
Rachel.
Yes.
And
where he's like, tell me you love me.
Yeah. Makes me really uncomfortable. Say you want me.
Yes.
That was the thing. Yeah. Like, hey, you will consent now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's Oogie. And then just like... By the end of the movie, I'm on Roy Batty's side. I'm like, I totally get it. Why wouldn't you want more life?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of rooting for him. And he sort of becomes the hero of the movie, saving Deckard's life at the end. And then he's got that magnificent speech and everything. And so in 2049, Kay makes a really effective protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And they humanize him by everything they show about the fact that the discrimination that he's experiencing because he's a replicant.
And they do that really quickly with just him walking through the precinct and they're all like there's, he's getting yelled at and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a really, it's not subtle, but it was quick.
Yeah. But they show also his isolation and the fact that he has this, you know, AI girlfriend who you get really, really attached to.
Yeah.
And you know, when that character quote dies.
And they take her away like that.
It's super sad.
Yeah.
And yet, then, you know, you get him having his kind of Pinocchio moment when he sees the big gigantic Joy, you know, hey, how are you doing, Joe, kind of thing, where he realizes that it wasn't really real.
No, it wasn't personal to him. It was like, it was a figment of something that was created for him.
Yeah.
Just kind of like his memories, which that twist was kind of crazy with, you know, spoilers for the movie, obviously, with Deckard's daughter being her memories.
Yeah.
Or in his head.
Right.
Really fascinating.
Right. And when he discovers that and he has that moment that he screams, you know, he's so quiet and subdued through most of the movie. And this is a kind of a common thing in a lot of Ryan Gosling movies.
Yes.
It seems
Sigma male.
Yeah, maybe. that when that emotion comes out, it's really, really effective.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I also like there's no music in that scene. Mm-hmm. It's about 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. You see him kind of start to boil over. And then he screams and like kicks the chair and then it cuts.
Yeah.
So it enables you to like you see it, but then it's done. Yeah. And so then you have to immediately process the emotion. And I think I think Ryan Gosling is a really good actor.
Yeah.
But I don't think he gets enough credit for this role. I think he is actually out of this world in this movie.
Yeah.
Because he does a incredible job at being robotic. And in a lot of movies, like in Drive, he's very robotic.
Yeah.
But he's also a human, so you're kind of like, oh, he's just, you know, kind of a weirdo. But in this, he is really robotic when he needs to be. And then as the movie goes on, he starts to become a little bit more human, have more empathy, which is a very good arc. And then, you know, has the musical tone at the end when he's laying in the snow, which is like it's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Mm-hmm. And he realizes, like, he did his mission, which was to reunite a mother with a father.
Yeah.
Because once he realized it wasn't him.
Daughter with a father.
Sorry, excuse me, daughter with a father. And so when he realizes that he's done that, he's like at peace with his life. He's done something real for the first time.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a very effective arc and that Ryan did a great job about, acting his butt off.
Yeah. So I think we're about wrapped, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say that this was not planned at all. This is just, I needed to test a microphone. And so I convinced Ethan to just kind of take up a conversation we started having last night.
Yeah.
So we haven't even really thought through more about
this. This was just like, all off the cuff.
Yeah, because there's plenty of other sequels out there that we really like. But so I would be curious if I release this and you hear it, you know, what are your favorite sequels? Why do you like, you know, the sequel better than the original? Why do you like the original better than sequel?
Mm-hmm. Or if you think there's maybe trilogies or series that get better as time goes on, aka Mission Impossible.
Right.
Exactly. Or it keeps getting better. Seriously. You know, stuff like that where directors have come in and have gotten a fresh start on or maybe – I mean, I don't like to bring superhero movies into it, but you take Taika taking over Thor 3 and 4. Like, you think that's appropriate?
Mm-hmm.
You think that's better for his character? Like there's a lot of interesting changes to characters, to stories that I think – sometimes they fall flat, but sometimes do a really good job.
Anyhow, I think that'll about do it. So thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.